This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's difficult to even begin to fathom the scale of plastic pollution. Plastics have been detected in every corner of the Earth, from the Arctic right up to the top of the Everest. Plastic pollution is clearly a global problem. So do we need a global commitment and plan that is then locally implemented by all, including governments, businesses and people? So the world's governments are set to meet at the United Nations Environment Assembly starting next week on the 28th of February, and the creation of a global treaty on plastics is set to be at the top of the agenda. So what are the implications of this? Today on another episode of Plastic Soup on Earth Matters, we're going to explore whether a global treaty is the way for us to get out of this plastic goop with Mageswari Sangarilingam. She's a senior research officer with the Consumers Association of Penang and Sahabat Alam Malaysia. Welcome, Magis. How are you today?
Yeah, good afternoon, Juliet. Yeah, I'm fine today.
Nice to have you back on the show, Maggie. It's always a pleasure to have you. We're going to talk about the global treaty a little bit after this, but let's just, you know, get our 101s on plastics out as we always do for all these episodes. We know plastic is said to be a major driver of climate change. Am I correct? Can you help explain? I think that's not something that people really connect with. Can you maybe explain how plastic contributes to the issue of global warming in particular?
Okay, 99% of plastic manufactured today, it actually comes from fossil fuels. Therefore, plastic results in massive emissions at each stage of its life cycle, yeah? From the extraction of fossil fuels to refining, plastic manufacturing, transport, and disposal. We often overlook that there are emissions from oil and gas drilling, transportation, and refining, which come from indirect emissions from electricity and heat, process carbon dioxide emissions, and also emissions of non-carbon dioxide greenhouse gases. So while the majority of direct and indirect emissions, they come from the extraction and manufacturing stage of the plastic life cycle, you also need to remember that burning plastic also leads to extremely high greenhouse gas emissions. So this is in the form of waste incineration, whether incineration, or sometimes they call it waste to energy plants, or also, and plastic is also co-fired in cement kilns as waste derived fuels, or even open burning. So these are the primary source of greenhouse gas emissions from plastic waste management, even after taking into account energy generation potential. When they are saying waste to energy, so even if you take into account energy generation potential, there's also a lot of greenhouse gas emissions which are being released from plastic waste. And also plastics production.
Yeah, I was reading that, you know, they said if the whole plastics life cycle were a country, it would be the fifth largest emitter of greenhouse gases in the world, something along those lines, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And of course, getting rid of all of this plastic also causes problems for the planet. I think, as you mentioned, you know, as you were saying, 16% of plastics are recycled, the rest goes to landfill for incineration or it's just dumped and all of that, right? We've spoken about this before, Magis, when we caught up the last time, you know, how huge quantities of plastic waste in Southeast Asia are actually coming from these developed nations, right, who sort of export it to developing countries like ours to recycle or dispose of it, basically getting rid of their problem and, you know, making these poorer countries sort of deal with it. Can you remind our listeners how that actually came to impact Malaysia not too long ago?
Okay, yeah, plastic waste is mostly exported under the banner of plastic recycling. And significant quantities also travel through contaminants in paper waste as well as in electronic waste streams. So we have seen all this in Malaysia. Another major waste is also from textile waste, where some textiles are made from plastics. So much of this exported plastic waste, they end up being burned, as you had already mentioned, also in open fields or in small-scale crude incinerators. Mm. So other plastic waste, I think we have also mentioned this previously in our previous recordings, it is exported as pelletized refuse-derived fuel or process-engineered fuel, and these are finally burnt in cement kilns. Mm. So ever since China closed its doors to 24 types of solid waste, that happened in January 2018, so the global plastic recycling industry was really turned, it was thrown into chaos. It was really chaotic. And it also revealed the true cost of plastic production, its consumption. And we realized there was an influx of single-use plastics, as well as the problem and limitations of global recycling as a solution to all this plastic waste problem. So since January 2018, plastic waste from the largest exporters such as the US, United Kingdom and Europe, it was diverted from China to other countries, specifically developing countries, especially in Southeast Asia. So Malaysia, Philippines, Indonesia, Thailand and Vietnam, we were receiving waste and some of it were not safe to be recycled or economically recyclable.
Yeah.
And soon we became a dumping ground, yeah?
Yeah.
As the imports included mixed plastic waste, non-recyclable plastic waste, or plastic waste that was significantly contaminated with other waste. So when recycling did occur, it was usually highly polluting, and it also threatened the health of workers, communities where the waste were dumped, and also the environment. Besides that, you know, the plastics also contain toxic additives and other toxic chemicals. So this is released when plastics are heated. So all this is an issue. Yeah? Malaysia also started taking actions to stop us from becoming a dumping ground.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've spoken to people who, you know, these illegal plastic recycling facilities would just suddenly pop up at, you know, neighborhoods which are maybe like not in the city, you know, and they feel very disempowered. You know, it was really like quite some criminal activity basically was happening, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right. And I do know that there are some existing global treaties, right? We also spoke about the Basel Convention before, but maybe you can help explain what treaties there are that already exist that cover the plastic problem. So we've got the Basel Convention. Can you help explain what that does exactly?
Okay, so the Basel Convention is a treaty to control transboundary movement of hazardous waste and also their disposal.
Mm-hmm.
So the overarching objective of the Basel Convention is to protect human health and the environment against the adverse effects of hazardous waste. Mm-hmm. So what covers hazardous waste? So there is a wide range of definition of hazardous waste. It is based on the origin or composition and the characteristics of the waste, as well as two types of waste, which is defined as other waste.
Mm.
So that is household waste and also incinerator ash. And in 2019, the Basel Convention introduced important restrictions to better control plastic waste trade, because it was such a big issue after China closed its doors.
Yeah.
But then, as you had mentioned earlier, much of the plastic waste export is actually illegal. And the Interpol had documented the surge in illegal plastic waste trade and treatment, as well as the involvement of organized crime in some of these operations. And they have also shown that illegal plastic waste trade and treatment often involves financial fraud and corruption. So this is an issue in terms of the Basel Convention.
Okay. And there are two others, if you could help explain what they are. There's the International Maritime Organization. What is that responsible for?
So the International Maritime Organization, it is particularly responsible for marine plastic litter from ships.
Okay.
So discharging plastics into the sea is already prohibited under the regulations for the prevention of pollution by garbage from ships. This is under the International Convention for the Prevention of Pollution from Ships. People call it MARPOL. And it also obliges governments to ensure adequate port reception facilities to receive ship waste.
Mm-hmm.
So then there is also the London Convention and Protocol on the Dumping of Waste at Sea. It only permitted materials that can be dumped, and this waste has to be fully assessed and to ensure it does not contain harmful materials like plastic litter.
Okay.
But then the IMO, they had pledged to further address the significant problem posed by plastics to the marine environment with the adoption of an action plan. So they've come up with an action plan which aims to enhance existing regulations and introduce new supporting measures to reduce marine plastic litter from ships. Yeah? So that is in terms of the IMO's responsibility regarding marine plastic litter.
Okay, all right. And then there's another thing that I was reading about called the Stockholm Convention. Maybe you can help explain what that one is.
Okay, the Stockholm Convention, it's a convention to address persistent organic pollutants.
Okay.
So this is also a global treaty to protect human health and the environment from chemicals. Why we call it persistent? Because these chemicals, they remain intact in the environment for long periods. And they are also widely distributed geographically.
Mm.
And it accumulates in fatty tissue of humans and wildlife and has harmful impacts on human health and on the environment. So exposure to POPs, we call it persistent organic pollutants, we normally call it POPs.
Okay.
It leads to serious health effects, including cancers, birth defects, and also other immune and reproductive systems dysfunctions. But in terms of the POPs, also not every chemical is listed in the Stockholm Convention.
Mm.
So the among the chemicals listed are all comprised of pesticides, industrial chemicals, and also unintentional production, for example, dioxins and furans. So dioxins and furans are carcinogens, and this is mostly released from incinerators and industrial as an industrial byproduct. So there are a few annexes, and if you want to get more information of the listed chemicals in Annex A, B, and C, you will have to read up more. You can just go to the website of the Stockholm Convention website to get more information on this.
Okay, all right. So we've got these three treaties, right? But it's been said, and I mean, this is what I was reading, that they do not represent a sort of holistic tool to tackle plastic pollution at the global level. Would you agree with that? Is there an international sort of framework to address plastic pollution as it stands?
Yes, I agree with you, because there is no international framework to address plastic pollution as a whole. While the Basel Convention, it provides a legal basis for prosecuting illegal trade, and it generally obliges parties to minimize waste generation, the treaty lacks the power to address plastic across its entire life cycle.
Mm.
So it does not address the root causes of global plastic waste dumping. This is an issue that they're looking into. And then, banning toxic chemicals in plastic products is essential to achieve a safe circular economy and ending toxic recycling. But the Basel Convention has not addressed the harmful additives in plastics. So in terms of IMO, as I had mentioned previously, it has a narrow scope of addressing marine plastic litter only.
That's
and
right.
only from the ships.
Okay.
As for the Stockholm Convention, it does not address all chemicals or additives used in plastics. For example, right now, UV328, it is currently under evaluation by the Stockholm Convention POPs Review Committee. So UV stabilizers, it is added onto plastics to prevent degradation from sunlight exposure.
Right.
So, but these UV stabilizers, they can migrate from plastics used as food contact materials. So in terms of the Stockholm Convention, there is a review committee to look into the chemicals that is going to be listed under the annexes. So these are the issues. And we are also part of a group called International Pollutants Elimination Network. CAP and SAM are participating organizations under IPEN. And we found that toxic chemicals, IPEN has found that toxic chemicals, which have been banned under International Chemicals Conventions, are also being recycled. So from plastic waste, the recycling of plastic waste into new consumer products.
Oh, wow.
So CAP and had already come up with some press statements regarding toxics in the plastic pellets, recycled plastic pellets, and pellets and fragments of plastics that we found on the beach, and also some of these toxic chemicals like BPA, bisphenol A, in baby feeding bottles. So we had just released press statements on these issues.
Yeah, I was briefly reading, and I was something that caught my eye was that all these bottles that say that they are BPA free, you found them to actually, that's not the case, right? They do contain BPA as well, and these are like children's bottles, as you said, things that we give our kids, the plastic drinking bottles and things like that, right?
Yeah. This is especially like quite concerning, because parents are buying feeding bottles thinking that it is like labeled BPA free, so we think it's best for the kids. But no, but when we did our analysis, we found there was BPA.
That's horrifying.
And Malaysia had already banned BPA in feeding bottles since 2012. So this is really we urge the Ministry of Health to look into this and also enforce the ban.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, and how do you, if it's labeled there like BPA, I mean, like you will take it in good faith that that is the truth, right? How is an individual going to go and like test and see whether it contains BPA? It's like, where's the...
Yeah. And if it's not BPA, it's BPS, and so it's like all the others. So it's really...
It's a mess.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. We're just going to go for a quick break, Magis. But when we come back, let's talk about this Global Plastics Treaty and how that can help. I'm speaking today to Magiswari Sangarilingam. She's a senior research officer at the Consumers Association of Penang and Sahabat Alam Malaysia. We're going to talk about an upcoming meeting involving the UN, which has its sights set on a Global Plastics Treaty, sort of something like a Paris Agreement for plastics. We'll find out more after this quick break. You're listening to another episode of Plastic Soup on Earth Matters, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's another episode of Plastic Soup, where we explore ways to get out of this plastic goop that we are in. You know, the plastic pollution crisis is a huge crisis. It's sometimes almost unfathomable how we've gotten ourselves into such a big problem, but we're exploring ways to get out of it. And one of that is said to be happening soon, actually. So starting from the 28th of February, the UN Environment Assembly Talks, also known as UNEA-5.2, something along those lines, has more than 100 states already supporting talks on a new global agreement, sort of a global plastics treaty, right? Magis, can you tell us what this is all about?
Okay, so the overall theme of UNEA 5, UN Environment Assembly 5, is strengthening actions for nature to achieve sustainable development goals. So between 28th of February to 2nd of March, over 190 governments, they will be meeting to discuss several draft resolutions. So these draft resolutions have been divided into five thematic areas, or we call it clusters. So including the cluster is plastics. Also another, the second one is nature-based solutions and biodiversity. Mm-hmm. Third is chemicals, then green recovery and circular economy. And also the fifth one is mostly organizational and administrative matters of the UNEA. So in the plastics cluster, there will be a discussion on the introduction of a global instrument to tackle marine waste and plastic pollution. So prior to that meeting, they have this open-ended committee of permanent representatives. Mm. So they will be meeting from 21st to 25th of February. So the role of the committee of permanent representatives is to prepare the meeting for UNEA and also review the implementation of its decisions and also look into the resolutions.
Okay. Yeah,
so that is what's happening in UNEA this year.
Okay, all right. So UNEA, yeah. Thank you. Sorry, I pronounced it wrongly just now. So the Treaty of Plastics, would you say that's top of the agenda? Is that something that's really quite important? I mean, it seems to be pointing to that.
Yeah, so there's more attention on the issue of plastics. You know, and previously, we never hear about UNEA, the UN
never.
Assembly. Yeah, but then right now, plastics has become top of the agenda. And there's also signature campaigns going around calling citizens from around the world to sign on for this urgent international treaty to end plastic pollution. So on ours, there's already like more than 700,000 signatures collected. So they started on 2nd of February. And so we hope that more people will start signing on to these petitions.
Okay. All right. And I was trying to understand this, right? I was reading that in order for negotiations over a global treaty on plastic pollution to even begin, a resolution which sets the scope and mandate for these negotiations must first be adopted at the UNEA 5, right? And I understand that so far, three such resolutions have been tabled?
Yeah. So under the plastic pollution thematic area, the main focus will be on discussing a mandate to start negotiation of a treaty on plastic. So they're not talking about the treaty yet. It is to start negotiation of the treaty.
Okay.
So if agreed, then the mandate would convene an intergovernmental negotiating committee. They call it the INC or INC.
Okay.
So under this thematic area, there are already three documents that will be discussed. One draft resolution, which is proposed by Rwanda and Peru, it's called the draft resolution on an internationally legally binding instrument on plastic pollution. Yeah, Japan's one is on internationally legally binding instrument on marine plastic pollution. So there is a difference. Yeah, Rwanda and Peru talks on plastic pollution. Japan speaks on marine plastic pollution. And there's also another draft resolution proposed by India, which is calling for a framework for addressing plastic product pollution, including single-use plastic product pollution. So there are differences in those three resolutions.
Okay, all right. And I guess, from what I've been reading, the one that you mentioned by table by Rwanda and Peru, that's got about 54 co-sponsors. It's said to be considered the most ambitious. Can you tell me about this?
Okay, so the Rwanda and Peru resolution, it addresses the life cycle of plastic, and it also calls for reduction in plastic production and to address chemical additives. So we view that the crisis of plastic pollution should be achieved by reducing the overall amount of plastic production. And just don't look into waste management. So it has to, we have to reduce the overall amount of plastic which is being produced. And so this will be addressing the full life cycle of plastics from production, consumption, design, to waste prevention, management, and treatment.
Okay.
So this Rwanda and Peru provision is also including compounds, additives, and harmful substances, as well as intentionally added microplastics. So we are more optimistic of the Rwanda-Peru draft resolution as it contains more specific guidance on the elements and design of a treaty. And it also contains an open mandate, whereby, as I mentioned, the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, which will be formed.
Yes.
So it can consider any other aspects which is relevant to be included in the treaty. So it is an open mandate.
Okay. And how does this differ with the other two resolutions that are being tabled?
So the Japan draft resolution, it's very narrow because it focuses on marine litter and waste management.
Sure.
And Japan's resolution has three co-sponsors, Cambodia, Palau, and Sri Lanka.
Okay.
So this mandate that focuses on waste management is, it's framed around marine litter.
Okay.
And it would not address the problem of plastic pollution because it will not include production, design of plastics, or use of toxic chemicals. And it's only more focused on ocean cleanups, recycling, and there is elements of incineration, which we are against.
Okay.
The Indian resolution, it doesn't propose to start negotiations for a treaty. Yeah. So there is no, doesn't have this mandate for negotiations. But what the Indian resolution is mentioning is to reduce plastic use at the national level, adopt extended producer responsibility, EPR programs, and also design plastics for their recyclability. So Indian resolution doesn't encompass everything as what is being proposed by the Rwanda-Peru resolution.
Okay, so you, as you mentioned, you're a bit more optimistic about the Rwanda-Peru resolution compared to the
yes.
other.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, okay. And ultimately, how will the scope of this global treaty be decided? You know, what would a global treaty on plastics actually look like?
Okay, we are not really sure because the, the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, they will have to start the negotiation on this.
Okay.
But we have our wish list. Yeah? What we want is that the treaty scope should not be limited to plastic waste or marine plastics, as this would preclude addressing some of the most important problems. So we are part of this Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives. And as in the alliance, what we are advocating for is that the plastic treaty should focus on three core goals. One of it is, as I have keep on mentioning, reduce the total quantity of plastic produced, improving circularity in plastics, and eliminating plastic pollution in the environment. So if you have more time, I can discuss more in terms of what we want through these three goals.
Please go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so in terms of reducing the total quantity of plastic produced, we know that plastic production is doubling every 15 to 20 years, and we did the volume of plastic waste which is generated. Yeah, and the oil and gas industry sees plastics as its primary growth market and is investing billions of dollars in new and expanded facilities. So although we have national action plans, even for Malaysia, countries should choose our own policy instruments. We should start banning single-use plastics which are not necessary, or impose plastic tax, and to scale back production. So if you have a target, so the countries will have to meet the target which is set upon globally. Yeah.
Okay.
So in terms of improving circularity in plastic, you can see that very little plastic is currently recycled. And most notably, it's because of the toxic additives inside it. Yeah. And so that it's a very big issue. Yeah. So what we want is some of polymers such as PVC, polyvinyl chloride, which is very dangerous. And most of it is also being burnt in incinerators, and that will also emit dioxins and furans. So this kind of polymers should be banned, totally banned. So Yeah, so in terms of eliminating plastic pollution in the environment, yeah, with reduced levels of plastic production, and we need to improve waste management, which we need to look into in terms of recycling and also the end of life plastics. You know, it is being dealt with environmentally safe methods. So these are things that we are looking into in terms of eliminating plastic pollution, and what we are saying that we should have an integrated zero waste system. Yeah, and this treaty, this global plastic treaty that they are planning to discuss, it should be legally binding, yeah, to ensure compliance and also stimulate national governments to come up with their policies. So these are what we have been calling. But then this plastic treaty should also have measurable goals. Yeah? Mm. And it should allow countries to be flexible in their approaches to reach those goals. Yeah, for all this to happen, we need also to have comprehensive monitoring and also look into financial and technical assistance for developing countries, least developed countries. So these are our wish list.
Okay, I mean, that sounds like a really robust, I mean, it sounds like a very practical wish list. Let's hope people actually listen. And in terms of, like, you know, countries or nations showing interest in this global agreement, right, do we have like sort of a count, you know, of how many nations are actually pushing for this? And you know, I'm just curious, where is Malaysia in all of this?
Okay, some reports have been mentioning that more than 75% of UN member states are backing the idea for this global treaty.
Okay.
And recently, on 11th of February, at the One Ocean Summit, which was held in France, the US, USA, France, Canada, and South Korea, they also announced their commitment to a binding treaty to tackle plastic pollution at all stages of its life cycle. So they have also been supporting the Rwanda-Peru resolution. And this resolution, as you mentioned, there's been nearly 54 countries, including 27 from the EU, which is backing the Rwanda-Peru resolution.
Okay.
And besides the countries, we also have civil society organizations. We have like about 1,000 organizations that have already signed on to this call for the UN to negotiate this new legally binding global instrument. And this civil society organizations include indigenous communities, workers, trade unions, and as well as scientists from around the world.
Okay.
So where is Malaysia in all of this? I need to give you a background on Malaysia's position on this.
Okay.
So prior to all this, there was a ministerial conference on marine plastic litter and plastic pollution, which was held in the beginning of September 2021. So the conference aimed to get support from countries to implement actions to address marine litter and also plastic pollution. Mm-hmm. So the Malaysian government had attended, this meeting was conducted virtually. So it had raised its views, especially in relation to readiness, capability, and also capacity of developing countries in enforcing, we've already mentioned about all these multilateral environment agreements, the Basel Convention, Stockholm Convention. So countries should be able to have the capacity to enforce another treaty. So what Malaysia had already mentioned, so all these capacity things were considered by the draft ministerial statement.
Okay.
But Malaysia was not happy because some of the factors that they had raised were not included. One of it is the principle of common but differentiated responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
This was not explicitly stated in the agreement or as an important element of the said agreement and as a basis for future negotiations. Another one is an important component that Malaysia has raised was the means of implementation, that is provision of supporting infrastructure to developing countries, least developed countries, and small islands developing states. So Malaysian government said this component was removed by the EU. So this action is seen to have an impact on Malaysia in implementing the commitment. So the Consumer Association of Penang had written to the Minister of Environment and Water. So this was the response that they had given to us. So, but then Malaysia said they will also be actively involved in the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee and the agenda at UNEA to ensure that Malaysia's interest is taken into account in any decisions made with regards to the new agreement. So besides that, Malaysia is also forming a National Negotiating Committee. Yeah, so because this committee is needed to scrutinize, plan, and prepare Malaysia's detailed position. So during negotiation, if Malaysia is already prepared, then they can present their position on this matter. So what is in Malaysia's position? They said that it will consider enforcement capacity, existing gaps in legislation, jurisdiction and governance issues, and along with it is the capability, direction, and constraints of the plastics industry in the implementation of the MEA. So as you know, Malaysia's plastic industry is a really huge industry, and it was reported in 2019 that it's a 30 billion ringgit industry. So Malaysia is looking into this measures too.
Okay. All right. We're just going to go for one more quick break, Marcus. When we come back, let's talk about, you know, the role that businesses and industries actually play in this global treaty. I'm speaking today to Margaswari Sangaralingam. She's a senior research officer at the Consumers Association of Penang and also at Sahabat Alam Malaysia. We're talking about the upcoming UNEA meeting and whether, you know, a global plastics treaty might actually come out from it. It's another episode of Plastic Soup on Earth Matters. We'll have more after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. We're continuing our series on the plastic pollution crisis. It's another episode of Plastic Soup. And today I have joining me Margaswari Sangaralingam. She's a senior research officer at the Consumers Association of Penang and also Sahabat Alam Malaysia. We're talking about an upcoming meeting at the UN where the sights are set on a global plastics treaty, something akin to a Paris Agreement for plastics. That key meeting is happening at the end of this month. Margis is helping to explain what this is all about. You know, it's quite complicated, but thank you so much for breaking it down for us, Margis. But so you explained, you know, countries and countries, how they are going to be negotiating. You also explained how CSOs and all are getting involved. What about industries and businesses? What role do they play in these sorts of talks?
Okay, we think that industries may dilute the treaty. I'm not sure whether you have read the Reuters report, which came out on 18th of February. Mm-hmm. So it states that publicly, you know, plastic industry groups representing firms like ExxonMobil, Royal Dutch Shell, and Dow, they've expressed support for a global agreement to tackle plastic waste. But then behind the scenes, however, these trade organizations are devising strategies to persuade countries to reject any deal that would limit plastic manufacturing. So this is according to emails and company presentations seen by Reuters, as well as they had interviewed officials who will be involved in the negotiations. So leading the effort is the American Chemistry Council, which is a powerful group of US-based oil and chemical firms. Yeah? So what we CSOs are calling for is that the treaty and national action plans, they should not rely on voluntary approaches, or corporate-led programs such as the voluntary extended producer responsibility, or there's also the plastic pact or offsetting schemes, because we feel that these are all greenwashing efforts with the primary purpose to prevent effective regulation while doing little to address the real problems. For us, the problem is plastic production.
Okay. All right. So that's going to be a huge one to look out for, I'm sure, right? At the at the meetings. Okay. All right. And this is something else I was reading about, EPR regulations or extended producer responsibility regulations. What are your thoughts on them? Or maybe you can explain what that is as well.
So EPR, extended producer responsibility, is an environmental policy tool that makes producers responsible for the entire life cycle of the product that they introduce on the market. Yeah, so from their design until end of life. So this includes waste collection and recycling. EPR is also among the approaches mentioned in Malaysia's roadmap. Malaysia, the Ministry of Environment and Water, they had launched Malaysia Plastic Sustainability Roadmap, which is from 2021 to 2030. And it is mentioned that extended producer responsibility, EPR, will be introduced in phases. So the implementation of the EPR scheme, it will begin with the voluntary scheme before transitioning to a mandatory scheme. So this EPR governance framework, it will be developed starting in 2022. And the adoption of voluntary EPR is slated from 2023 to 2025. So it is stated in the document that mandatory EPR for packaging will be fully implemented in 2026.
Okay.
So one issue of EPR and a pitfall that is to be avoided is that we do not want continued production of problematic and non-recyclable plastic, like multi-layered single plastics, single-use plastics, sachets, as this creates additional strain on waste collection systems. So these are some of the issues of EPR.
Okay. All right. So I guess, you know, Magis, what happens next, right? So the meeting is going to happen in just about a week's time, right? You know, will they come to an agreement? How long might it take for them to come to an agreement? I mean, what are some possible scenarios from next week's meeting?
So as I mentioned earlier, the meeting is just to give a mandate to start negotiation.
Right. Okay.
So we are not sure when we are going to reach an agreement. So it may take years, but if CSOs keep on pushing for it, then, we may, reach it in a few more years to go.
No.
Yeah, we're not sure.
But I mean, given the scale of the plastic pollution problem, can we actually wait that long to just get to an agreement?
Yeah, we want the treaty to be agreed upon, as soon as possible. Mm. But then in the meantime, the countries don't have to wait for the treaty. They should already start prioritizing reducing plastic production and use and eliminating unnecessary single-use plastics and promote reuse and improve design. So we need Malaysian government to also enforce the mandatory waste separation law. So we do have a waste separation law, but it's not really fully implemented. Yeah, I can still see that people are not separating their waste.
Yep.
Yeah, and also even if they separate plastics, they are not cleaning the plastic waste before sending it for recycling. So if you clean it, then you can reduce the mixing and contamination of plastic waste.
Yep.
So other waste streams such as paper also should be free from plastics. Yeah? And I have kept on emphasizing plastics are produced with toxic additives, whether it is fossil-based or not. And this cannot be considered as circular economy. And this should be phased out. So we are also asking for EPR programs should ensure through taxes, fees and deposit return programs that plastic producers take full responsibility for the impact of their products throughout their life cycle. And they should also be financially responsible for minimizing the dangers. Yeah?
Yeah.
So these are the things that, you don't have to wait for a treaty. Governments should already start doing it. And Malaysia also has a roadmap. Yeah, and you have to ensure that it is being implemented.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Magis. But before I let you go, what should we as individuals do? Do you have a message why we should be concerned about this issue in the first place? Maybe some suggestions on how people can get more educated on this topic and why they should get educated on this topic.
Okay. So plastic pollution is a really serious concern. Yeah? You would have read it is in our food, it is in our water, the air we breathe, the deepest ocean trenches, and also in the most remote mountains. Yeah? So it is really harmful to human health and ecosystems. And so we really need to be cautious. So we need to take action to protect ourselves, our families, our communities, and the planet from plastic pollution. So you can check out the websites of Consumers Association of Penang, Sahabat Alam Malaysia, and also International Pollutants Elimination Network. I have already spoken about a lot of public publications that have been churned out by IPEN regarding toxics in plastics. And also the Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives, they have come up with really useful fact sheets in terms of discussions. Yeah. For example, plastic and waste pickers, plastics and climate change. So this is like a package of publications for us to be, to get more information regarding what is happening in UNEA and what we are calling for as civil society organizations. So these are really good reading material for us to learn more about this issue and also to take action. And also Sabah Alam Malaysia, we had come up with a toolkit, a very educational and also a colorful toolkit, which is for youths. And so it is really attractive and it has measures on what you can do to reduce the consumption of plastics and also moving towards zero waste. So there's a lot of information out there. So you just have to take initiative to look for this information.
Yeah, and I think bottom line is, right, everything that happens will come back to affect us personally. I think plastics, even been found microplastics, even in mothers' placentas, isn't it? Like, there's nowhere it's safe from plastic. We've seen, wildlife, dying by consuming plastic bags and things like that. It's just everywhere. It's so pervasive. And if we don't actually, lobby our government to take note of this issue, it's just going to persist lah, and it's going to come to affect us as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Margis, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Margiswari Sangarilingam. She's the Senior Research Officer at the Consumers Association of Penang and also at Sahabat Alam Malaysia. As Margis mentioned, just head to their websites. Sahabat Alam's website is foe-malaysia.org, or you can go to consumer.org.my to find out more. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can always search for the podcasts at bfm.my/earth, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been another episode of Plastic Soup on Earth Matters, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.